Well, I'm not a journalist. I don't work for journalists. I work for people. You're a people. I'm not a critic. I don't work for critics either. I find your work very good.
Very good?
Well, I haven't made a study of it, of course. Somehow or other, I never thought I'd be asked by Raleigh Wisham what I think of his television reporting. Mostly, of course, I look at the sports. Nevertheless, tell me what you think of my work.
I think it's very good. I like it.
What you do is different from what the others do. Let me see. I have more of a sense of people from your stories. You don't just sit back in a studio and report something. You're in your shirt sleeves and you're in the street. Whatever you're talking about, dope addicts, petty criminals, you make us see them as people, with their own problems and fears. I don't know how to judge it as journalism. I wish you were a critic. You just gave me a good review.
Well, I have no way to judge such things.
Next question is, no more questions, Mr. Wisham. If I'm good enough at my job to please you, the network, and a hell of a lot of viewers, how come Walter March was out to screw me?
That's a question.
Got an answer?
No, but I've got some questions.
I'm asking them for you.
Okay, Mr. Wisham. You're more experienced at asking questions than I am. I've got the point.
That's not the point. I'm not trying to put you down, Captain Neal. I'm trying to tell you something.
What? What are you trying to tell me?
You look at television. There are a lot of television reporters. Most of us have our own style. What's the difference between me and the others? I'm younger than most of them. My hair is a little longer. I don't work in a studio in a jacket and tie. My reports are usually feature stories. They're supposed to be softer than so-called hard news. Most of my stories have to do with people's attitudes and feelings, more than just hard facts. That's my job, and you just said I do it pretty well.
Mr. Wisham, so why me?
Why would Walter March or anyone else raise a national campaign to get me off the air?
Okay, Mr. Wisham. Raleigh, you asked the question. You could wear an elephant down to a mouse.
Because he was afraid of me.
Walter March afraid of you?
I was becoming an enormous threat to him.
Someone told me last night, I think it was that Nettie Horn woman, all you journalists have identity problems. Delusions of grandeur, she said. Raleigh, a few minutes of network television time a week, I mean, against Walter March and all those newspapers coast to coast coming out every day, edition after edition. Potentially, I was an enormous threat to him.
Okay, Raleigh, I'm supposed to ask why now, is that right?
I've been trying to tell you something.
Okay.
I have more reason to murder that bastard than anyone you can think of.
Don't tell me I need a lawyer. I know my rights. I came to this convention because the network forced me to. I came with such hatred for that bastard. Frankly, I was afraid to cross his path, to see him, or even hear him, or be in a room with him, for fear of what I might do to him.
Wait. My dad owned a newspaper in Denver. I was brought up skiing, horsing around, loving journalism. My dad, happy to be the son of a newspaper publisher. Once a newspaper starts to decline in popularity, it's almost impossible to reverse the trend. I didn't know it, but when I was about 10, Dad's newspaper began to go into a decline. By the time I was 14, he had mortgaged everything, including his desk, goddammit, the desk he had inherited from his father, to keep the paper running. These were straight bank loans, but unfortunately, Dad had made the mistake of using only one bank. He wasn't the sharpest businessman in the world.
Neither am I. Just when Dad thought he was turning the paper around, it had taken 5 years, this one bank called all the loans.
Could they do that? I mean, legally?
Sure. Dad never thought they would. They were friends. He went to see them. They wouldn't even speak to him. They called all the loans at once, and that was it.
I don't get it.
Neither did Dad. Why would the bank want to take over a newspaper, especially when there was hope for its doing well? They wouldn't know how to run it. Dad lost the newspaper. He gave up as decently as he could. He wandered around the house for weeks, trying to figure out what had happened. I was 15. There was a rumor around that the bank had sold the newspaper to Walter March of March Newspapers.
Okay, it seems like an ordinary...
Not a bit ordinary. These bankers were old friends of my father, hunting, fishing, cussing, and drinking friends.
He was hurt.
He was curious. He was also a hell of a journalist. In time, he found out what had happened. People always talk. Walter March had bought up Dad's loans, lock, stock, and barrel, to get control of the newspaper.
Why did the bankers let him? They were friends.
Blackmail, Captain Neal. Sheer, unadulterated blackmail. He had blackmailed the bankers individually as persons.
So far in your 24 hours of investigation, have you heard about Walter March and his flotilla of private detectives?
I've heard rumors.
When I was 16, Dad died of a gunshot wound in the temple, fired at close range. The recording tape reel revolved 3 times before Raleigh Wisham said, "I never could understand why Dad didn't shoot Walter March instead."
"Mr. Wisham, I really think you should have a lawyer present."
"No lawyer." Captain Neal sighed audibly.
"Where were you at 8 o'clock Monday morning?"
"I had driven into Hendricks to get the newspapers and have breakfast in a drugstore, or whatever I could find."
"You have a car here?"
"A rented car."
"You could have had breakfast and gotten your newspapers here at the hotel."
"I wanted to get out of the hotel. Night before, I'd seen Walter March with Jake Williams in the elevator. They were laughing. Something about the president and golf. Catfish. I hadn't slept all night."
"Did you drive into Hendricks alone?"
"Yes."
"Okay, Mr. Wisham, I don't see any problem. Your face is famous. We can just ask people down in the village. I'm sure they saw you and recognized you. Where did you have breakfast?"
"I never got out of the car, Captain Neal."
"What?"
"I did not have breakfast and did not buy newspapers. At least not until I got back to the hotel."
"Oh, Lord."
"I changed my mind. I drove through that shopping center and said to hell with it. It was a beautiful morning and the shopping center looked so sterile. Also, of course, I'm forever making simple little plans like going to a drugstore for breakfast. I like people, you know. I like being with people. And I get right up to it and I realize everybody will recognize me and giggle and shake hands and ask for autographs. I'm not keen on that part of my life."
"Are you saying that no one saw you Monday morning?"
"I guess I prevented anyone from seeing me. I wore sunglasses. I drove around, over the hills. Maybe I was trying to talk myself out of murdering Walter March."
"What time did you leave the hotel?"
"About 7:15.
"What time did you get back?"
"About 9. I had breakfast in the coffee shop here. I didn't hear about Walter March's murder until later, 10:30, 11.
"Okay, Mr. Wisham. You say Walter March was smearing you, trying to destroy you."
"Not trying to, Captain Neal. He was going to. There is no doubt in my mind he would have succeeded."
"Because you were becoming a potential threat to him."
"Don't you agree? I could never be as powerful as Walter March. We lost the only newspaper we had. But I have been becoming an increasingly powerful and respected journalist. I'm only 28, Captain Neal. I have a lot to say and a forum for saying it. Even having me at this convention telling people what I know about Walter March was a threat to him. You've got to admit I was more a threat to him as a halfway decent and important journalist than if I had become a skiing instructor in Aspen."
"I guess so.
Tell me, Mr. Wisham, do you happen to know what suite the March family were in?"
"Suite 3.
"How did you know that?"
"I checked. I wanted to avoid any area in which Walter March might be."
"You checked at the desk?"
"Yep. Which gave me an opportunity to steal the scissors, right?"
"You're being very open with me, Mr. Wisham."
"I'm a very open guy.
Anyhow, you strike me as a pretty good cop. There's a lot of pressure on this case. Sooner or later, you'd discover Walter March drove my dad to suicide. Everyone in Denver knows it, and probably half the people here at the convention do. Concealing evidence against myself would just waste your time and leave me hung up."
"It's almost as if you were daring me, Mr. Wisham."
"I am daring you, Captain Neal. I've worked a lot with cops. I'm daring you to be on my side and to believe I didn't kill Walter March."
Chapter 20. 3:30 p.m. Computers and Labor Unions. Seminar. Aunt Sally Hendricks' sewing room. At 3:30 Wednesday afternoon, all the tennis courts were in use. The swimming pool area was full, and on the hills around Hendricks' plantation house, people were walking and horseback riding. The bar, Bobby Joe Hendricks' lounge, was dark and empty, except for some people from the Boston Press keeping up their lunch and glow with gin and tonics. And Walter March, Jr., sitting at the bar. Fletch sat beside him and ordered a gin and bitter lemon from the bored, slow-moving barman. At the sound of his voice, Junior's head turned slowly to look at him. Junior's eyes were red-rimmed and glazed, his cheeks puffy, his mouth slack. A small vein in his temple was throbbing. He looked away slowly, thought a moment, burped, and looked back at Fletch. He said, "William Morris Fletcher,
I remember you. Irwin Maurice Fletcher. That's right. You used to work for us. Practically everybody used to work for you. Flesh. There used to be a joke about you, and the word was made Fletch. Yeah. There were lots of jokes about you. You were a joke. Fletch paid the barman. Walter March Jr. said, "You heard my father's dead?" I heard something to that effect. Someone stabbed him. Junior made a stabbing motion with his right hand, his eyes looking insane as he did it. With scissors. Fletch said, "Tough to take." "Tough," Junior snorted. "Tough for him. Tough for March newspapers. Tough for the whole motherfucking world." "Tough for you." "Yeah." Junior blinked slowly. "Tough for me. Tough darts. Isn't that what we used to say in school?" "I don't know. I wasn't in school with you." There was a long, slow, blinking pause. Junior said, "My father hated you." Fletch said, "Your father hated everybody." Another three blinks. "I hated you." "Anyone who hates me is probably right." "My Jesus, father thought you were night and day." Fletch sipped his drink. "What does that mean?" Junior tried to look at Fletch in the proper executive fashion. "You know, he wanted to make a thing with you. He loved your balls." Junior's eyelids drooped. "He wanted to bring you along, you know, make something of you." "Gee, and I'm not even in journalism anymore, just a hanger-on." "You remember his trying to frighten you once?"
"No."
"He tried to scare you."
"I don't remember it."
"That's because you weren't frightened, shit. You remember the story about the governor's secretary?"
"Yeah."
"He sent memos to you, directly, telling you to blow the story."
"Sure."
"He came to town, sent for you in his office."
"Yeah."
"Scared the shit out of you."
"Did he?"
"Told you you'd be fired if you wrote the story."
5 minutes in an office. Junior's head swooped up toward Fletch.
"You wrote the fucking story, and then quit."
"Yeah." There was a long pause and two small burps.
"It wasn't the governor Dad cared about. Not the governor's secretary. Not the story."
This time, Junior put the back of his hand to his burp.
"It was you."
There was a long pause, Irwin Morris Fletcher said, while Irwin Morris Fletcher reacted.
"You don't get the point," Junior said.
"I get the point," Fletch said. "People are always shitting around, and I'm me. I always get the point."
"Apologize."
"Apologize?
Jesus, yes, apologize."
"For what? For everyone else always shitting around, or for me being me?"
"Before my dad did that."
Apparently, Junior was considering the prudence of saying what he was about to say.
"He had every kind of a fix run on you."
Fletch sat quietly over his drink.
"He wanted you," Junior said.
"I was an employee. I wrote that story. Quit. A common incident in this business."
"Dad didn't want any of that. He wanted you. He ran every kind of a fix on you. Have I said that?"
"No."
"Before he tried to throw the scare into you, he had you worked over with a fine-toothed pig."
"That I don't understand."
"He wanted you. You were tough. You didn't scare."
"He let me resign."
"That, Butte,"
Junior leaned toward him,
"was because he hadn't figured you out. He gave up, you see."
"He put detectives on me?"
"He liked your style in the city room. You were a $1,000 job at first, a mere hand job. He couldn't believe what he found out. More, $10,000, $15,000.
I would rather have taken it in pay."
"He couldn't believe...
who you were married to then?
I don't remember.
He said, either all of it's true or none of it's true.
None of it's true, Fletch said. At the age of 11, if you want the truth.
Stories, Junior said. You usually get the stories about you at dinner.
Fletch said, this is very uncomfortable. What a lousy bar. The barman has dirty elbows. No music? What's that noise? Moon River. That's what I mean, no music. Look at that painting, disgusting. A horse of all things. A horse over a bar. Ridiculous.
Junior was blinking over his drink. It was me Dad hated.
What?
All my life, I grew up,
most of us did,
being Walter March Jr. Walter March Newspapers Jr. The inheritor of enormous power.
That can be a problem.
What if I wanted to be a violinist or a painter or a baseball player?
Did you? Junior closed his eyes tight over his drink.
I don't even know.
Someone at the table in the corner said, Walter marched. Someone else said, and about time to boot. Fletch looked over at them. Junior hadn't heard.
You know, the first day I was supposed to report for work, Junior said, September, the year I graduated college. They'd let me have the summer off. I walked to the office, stood across the street from it, staring at it. 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. Then I walked back to my apartment. I was scared shitless. That night, Jake Williams came over to my apartment and talked to me for hours. Next morning, he picked me up, and we walked into the March Newspapers building together.
Junior went through the motions of drinking from his empty glass.
Good old Jake Williams.
Fletch said nothing.
Fletcher, will you help me?
How?
Work with me, the way Dad wanted.
I don't know anything about the publishing side of this business, the business end.
It doesn't matter.
It does to me. Junior tightened his right fist and let it down slowly on the bar as if he were banging it in slow motion.
Help me.
Junior, I suspect you missed lunch.
My father loved you so much.
Come on, I met the bastard. I mean your father, the bastard, the big bastard, 5 minutes in his office.
I can't explain.
Fletch, on his bar stool, was facing Walter March Jr. There were tears on Junior's cheeks. Fletch said, nappy time? Junior straightened up immediately. Suddenly, no tears, no whining voice, no quivering. Princeton right down the spine, hand firmly around the empty glass, not deigning to answer. Hey, Walt, Fletch said, I was thinking of a sauna and a rub. They've got this fantastic lady hidden away in the basement, a Mrs. Leary. She gives a great massage. Junior looked at him. He was the president of March Newspapers.
Good to see you again, Fletcher, he said.
He cleared his throat.
I guess I just said I'm sorry you didn't stay aboard.
He dipped his head to Fletch.
Can I have a drink since your room?
No, that's all right. Fletch stood up from the bar stool. He looked at Junior closely through the dark of the bar. As a matter of fact, Walt, Fletch put his hands in his trouser pockets, I would like you to send a drink to my room. He drawled, I'd appreciate it. Room 79. He spoke slowly, softly, deliberately. A couple of gin and tonics. Room 79, okay? I'd appreciate it. Room 79.
Fletch wasn't sure how well Junior was hearing him, if at all.
Thanks, Walt. Chapter 21. From tape, Station 8, Suite 8, Oscar Perlman.
Yeah. May I say, Mr. Perlman, how much my wife enjoys your columns?
Fuck your wife.
Sir, Captain Neal said. Fuck your wife. It's always my wife likes your columns.
Clearly, Oscar Perlman was talking through a well-chewed cigar.
Every time I do anything, a book, a play, it's always my wife likes it. I go to a party and try to get the topic of conversation off me and my work because I know what to expect already. I say, what did you think of Nureyev last night at the National Theater? My wife liked it. Always my wife liked it. You saw the latest Bergman? My wife liked it. What about Neil Diamond's latest record? Isn't it something else? My wife liked it. You read the new Joe Gore's novel? My wife. What about King Lear these days? My wife says it's chauvinistic. The father expects something. Always my wife liked it, didn't like it. What are American men? A bunch of cultural shits? Always what the wife likes. The men don't have eyes, ears, and a brain? What's the matter with you? You can't say you like my column? It's feminine to like my column? Will your chest suck up your hair and push it out your asshole if you say something other than hockey, boxing, and other nose-endangering sports?
Mr. Perlman, I'm just a normal veteran.
You do fuck your wife, don't you?
I have never met such a bunch of strange, eccentric, maybe sick people.
Does she say she likes it?
Mr. Perlman,
do you believe everything your wife says? Who should believe everything his wife says, anyway? Why don't you say you enjoy my column? I work just for wives? Fred Waring works for wives. And look at him, he invented Mixmasters. No, he invented Waring Blenders. Maybe there's a man who's pleased to have everybody come up to him saying, my wife likes your work. He sold plenty of Waring Blenders. Jesus Christ, why don't you just shut up and sit down?
I have a terrible feeling I've just blown a column on you, Oscar Perlman said. So already you owe me $17,000. Relax, you want a cigar? Play cards? A little up and down?
I don't drink, but there's plenty of stuff around.
Christ, I just blew a column. How's your wife? I'm supposed to be here enjoying. I'm not. I lost $1,200 last night. These little shits from Dallas, St. Louis, oof. $1,200. What, you don't want a drink? These cards are dirty. They took $1,200 from me.
Mr. Perlman, any time you're ready to answer some questions.
Shoot. So, old Waller March got it up thee. Never was up thee more deserved. Everybody else around here is writing about it. To me, it isn't funny yet. Make it funny for me. I'll appreciate it.
Mr. Perlman.
Don't shout at me, you backwater egg-sucking cop. You've cost me a column already. You were a veteran?
Listen, I know you journalists are in the business of asking questions. I'm in the business of asking questions. I'm going to ask the questions. Is that clear?
Jesus, he's getting hysterical. You don't play cards at all? You should. Very relaxing.
Mr. Perlman. You used to work for Walter March?
Years ago, I worked on one of his newspapers. 25 years ago. Most of the people here at this convention work for March one time or another. Why ask me?
I'm asking the questions.
That's not a question.
You wrote your first humorous column on his newspaper?
You say it's humorous? Thank you.
You first developed your column on his newspaper?
That's not a question either, but the answer is yes.
Then you took the column you had developed on one of March's newspapers, the one in Washington, and sold it to a national syndicate?
International. Wives all over the world like my column.
Why did you walk out on Walter March and sell your column to another syndicate?
I'm supposed to starve because the man didn't have a sense of humor. Even his wife didn't have a sense of humor. He refused to syndicate my column even to his own newspaper chain. I gave him enough time, 2-3 years.
Is it true he helped you develop your column?
Is it true trees grow upside down? It's true, the dairymaid said, if you're always lying on your back. He allowed the column to run, irregularly, usually cut in half, on the obituary page. From his encouragement, I could have had a free funeral. I was so big with the local undertakers.
And after you went with the syndicate, he sued you. Is that true?
He didn't win the suit. You can't sue talent.
But he did sue you.
You can't sue talent and win. He was laughed out of court. The judge's wife had a sense of humor.
And then what?
Oscar Perlman repeated. And then what?
Mrs. March says the antagonism between you two has kept up all these years.
Old Lydia's fingering me, huh? That lady's got sharp nails.
Has the antagonism between you kept up all these years?
How could it? We had nothing to do with each other. He's been running his newspapers, I've been writing my column.
Someone told me March never gave up trying to force you to run your column in his newspapers.
Who told you that?
Well, actually, Stuart Poynton.
Nice guy. Did he get my name right?
I was wondering about that. He kept calling you Oscar Wildman.
Sounds about right.
Did you change your name?
No, Poynton did. He changes everybody's name. He's a walking justice of the peace.
Please answer the question, Mr. Perlman.
Did March continue to want my column to run in his newspapers?
Well, in most areas, as things worked out, my column ran in newspapers competing with his. I attract a few readers. I guess, yes, the matter would continue to be of some importance to him.
What was the nature of Walter March's, let's say, effort to get your column back in the March newspapers?
You tell me.
Mr. Perlman, no one's pinned anything on me since I was a baby. That's an old line, I'm ashamed to say.
Are you aware that Walter March kept a large number of private detectives on his payroll?
Who told you that?
You journalists are mighty particular about pinning down the sources of every statement, aren't you?
Who told you?
Raleigh Wisham, for one.
Raleigh, nice kid.
Were you aware of Mr. March's private detectives, Mr. Perlman?
If they were any good as private detectives, I wouldn't be aware of them, would I?
Did Walter March ever try to blackmail you?
How? There's absolutely nothing in my life I could be blackmailed about. My life is as clean as a Minnesota kitchen.
There was a pause. Stretched out on his bed, Fletch had closed his eyes. Finally, Captain Neal said, "Where were you Monday morning at 8 o'clock?
In my bedroom, sleeping.
You were in the corridor outside the March's suite.
I was not.
You were seen there.
I couldn't have been.
Mr. Perlman, Mrs. March has given us a very detailed description of running through the open door of her suite, seeing you in the corridor, walking away, lighting a cigar, running toward you for help, recognize you, then running past you to bang on the door of the Williams' suite.
She was upset. She could have seen green zebras at that point.
You don't remember seeing Lydia March at 8 o'clock Monday morning?
Not even in my dreams.
Captain Neal, we played poker until 5:30 in the morning. I slept until 11:30.
Is there anyone here you know of Mrs. March could confuse you with?
Robert Redford didn't come to this convention.
You're willing to swear you were not in the corridor outside the March's suite about 8 o'clock Monday morning?
Lydia March would be a totally unreliable witness about what or whom she saw at that moment in time.
Is that what you're relying on, Mr. Perlman?
You want to know who killed Walter March? I'll tell you who killed Walter March. Stuart Poynton killed Walter March. He was trying to kill Lewis Graham, only he got the names and the room numbers mixed up.
Chapter 22. 4:30 p.m. The Big I. Advocacy Journalism. Right or wrong, and who says so? Seminar. Conservatory. Fletch was kneeling, shoving his marvelous machine back under the bed, when he heard the glass door to the pool area slide open.